chapter 8. It's the first chapter under the new system of putting the slide in a little red box in the narrative. So from now on, that's what I'm doing. I'll eventually get around to revising the early ones, but you can now print the narrative and an exact replica of the slide will appear in a little red rimmed box just before that the discussion of that slide occurs in the narrative. Okay. Makes the printing the narrative, a printed version of the narrative, more useful, more like, kind of more useful than it was before. One of the things I've gotten feedback from students is they, especially with distance students, like to be able to print something and take it to the office. So I'm getting better at it. This is, I think, kind of a, unless y'all disagree, you should tell me if you do, but this is pretty much the format I'm closing in on. So slide appears, then the narrative. Slide appears, then the narrative. This is all in one file that you can print. It's an HTML file. I have the link from the slide, which of course is a different file and appears in larger font, stuff like that, for projection. But I have the link from the slide down to the narrative occur past the slide, so you won't be bothered by having to scroll past it to see the narrative when you're using slide mode. All righty then. Lists. It's another kind of container class. We've already had vector, and we're going to do list, and a couple chapters down the road, we're going to do deck. And these are all going to be container classes that take a parameter of a type name that can be substituted in, and they're designed to store objects of type 2. Lists are very useful and important in computing, and that shouldn't be surprising because they're very important in daily life. Very few people write a shopping vector and go to the grocery store. They tend to write shopping lists and go to the grocery store. So it's a very natural and useful device for keeping track of stuff. So what we're going to do here is begin with an analysis of critical properties of lists that come from our basic human concept of what a list is. Then we'll proceed to a functionality wish list for lists. And then we'll talk about the need for list iterators. Then we'll define an interface and finally talk about implementations. So, our list wish list. Notice that that's a list, by the way. It's not a wish vector. We'd like to be able to insert items into the list. At the front, at the back, and at any other specified location. And we like to do this with minimal cost computationally. So we would like that to be an O of 1 or theta of 1, whichever you want to say, operation. Inserting at the front, inserting at the back, inserting in the middle would all be O of 1 operations. Notice that 2 out of 3 of those we can't do with a vector. We can insert at the back with amortized cost over 1, but not anywhere else in a vector. We could invent a push front for the vector, but it would be a costly operation. It would cost O of n, not O of 1, because to to get to wedge something in at the first location in a vector, what you have to do is make a vector bigger and then do a leapfrog, what I call a leapfrog copy of the elements of the vector up one index until you all get down to the front, and that vacates space where you can put the new element. By the way, you're going to have to do that leapfrog copy business when you're inserting items, new users in your password vector. Because when you insert a new user, you have to first write check. You have to first check to see that that user isn't already in the data. Then you have to insert the new user in the right place. And the right place is the index returned by your search. But before you put the new user and signature in that place, you've got to essentially vacate it, which will mean moving the top user up an index, and then the one under that up an index, and all the way down to the place where you need to do the insert. We'd also like to be able to remove elements from a list, from the front, from the back, from a specified location, and we'd like to be able to do that in constant runtime. And that's, again, something we can't do with a vector. You can move from the back of a vector in constant runtime, but not anyplace else. Try to do it anyplace else, and you get into a leapfrog copy loop that's going to cost you O of N, not O of N. We'd like to be able to remove all items equal to a specified value in a list. Now that obviously is going to cost us because we're going to have to search through the list and find them, right? We'd like an assignment operator. We'd like to be able to say when two lists are equal or not equal. We want our list type to be a proper type. We want it to be a generic class, meaning a template class. And we need to figure out some convenient way to iterate through the list. With vectors, we can do that using the index, but lists aren't going to come with an index. So we've got some work to do to figure out how to make this thing go. But this is what we want. So the list iterator wish list like to be able to initialize this iterator, which is going to be a way to get to an item in the list, at the first element. We'd like to be able to initialize it at the last element. We'd like to be able to increment to the next item on the list. We'd like to be able to decrement to the previous item on the list. We'd like to be able to return the value of the current item. Need to be able to detect the end of an iteration. We need to be able to compare two iterators to see if they're the same. And we need to be able to detect whether an iterator is pointing to a valid item on the list or not. And since we're making a class, we want it to be a proper type. It's got to be generic, because we've got to make it a template class. And all of our iterator operations should run in constant time. That's a pretty big list of wishes there. And they probably don't make complete sense to you, although it sounds reasonable, right? It doesn't make complete sense yet, because we really haven't kind of said, well, what exactly is an iterator anyway? Whatever it is, we want to be able to do this with it. You want to think back to sequential search. One of the things we want to be able to do with these iterators is sequential search in a list. So if you want to be able to find something in a list, it means you've got to be able to start at the beginning, test values, go to the next value, and keep doing that until you get to the end of the list. The iterator will be the thing we're using to do that with. So here's our proposed list public interface. We want to be able to push front, push back an item. We want to be able to insert at a location a given item. Now you see that we're going to use the iterator to tell us what the location is. So we'll pass in an iterator and a type T element, and we want to insert type T at the place, at I, but of course that really means in the list where I is pointing. There's some fine print associated with this insert operation as well. The fine print is the iterator will be left pointing to the newly inserted item, which is why this iterator is passed in by reference, because it's going to change. It's going to be transformed a little bit by this operation. The iterator will be left pointing to the newly inserted item. Of course, it can't be pointing there now because that item isn't in there yet. We want to be able to pop the back, pop front, and remove the item a given iterator is pointing to. There's some fine print associated with the remove also, and that is that this iterator, which is passed in by reference, will be left pointing at the item that was immediately following the removed item. In a sense, it's left pointing at the new item that's taken the place of the old item as you kind of make the list smaller. And clear, make the list empty. We want to be able to calculate the size of the list. We want to be able to know if the list is empty or not. And that was part of the public interface. There's some more of the public interface. We'd like to be able to locate places on the list with a begin function, and that's going to return what you by now realize is the type that we're going to use to designate locations as an iterator. So begin has got to return an iterator pointing to or at, if you like, the first element of the list. And will return an iterator past the last item on the list. So, n doesn't return an iterator pointing to the last item on the list. It returns something that's beyond that in some logical sense. R begin and R end will be kind of the backwards version of begin and end. R begin returns an iterator at the last element, and Rn returns an iterator before the first element, if you like. And those support iteration from the back to the front, instead of front. The goal here in all of this is to make this loop make sense. I'm going to write a loop on the board here. That we want to make sense is for I equal L dot begin semicolon I not equal to L dot end semicolon plus I. And there's a loop body, and we don't, anything can be done in that loop body, but in particular, you're allowed to dereference I, and that will be the element at that particular location. This loop, you want to be a traversal of the whole list. So, and this I, I didn't say what type it is, but I is a type list iterator.
said you wanted that loop to be a something versatile, something old list?
Traversal, yeah. Something that starts at the beginning, goes all the way through the end of the list, and look, that touches every element as it goes through. I didn't know it's traversal, man. That's what I'll mean by it, yes. At some point, I'll formally define a traversal to be this loop, where I is the iterator type for the container class. So this loop is a traversal for a list. And if the container was a vector, this would be a traversal for a vector. And we'll have other containers that will also have traversals. But it's this loop we want to make sense, and we use iterators to support it. And there's the R begin and R end support iteration from the back to the front. So there's a complementary loop that goes like this: for I equal L dot R begin. I not equal to L dot R n. That means the end of a reverse, the R is for reverse, the end of a reverse traversal, if you like. And then we do minus minus I here, because we're going backwards. So this would be kind of a reverse order traversal, if you like, of the list. Starts at the back of the list and goes to the So that's what the begin and end and R begin and R end are about. We want to be able to access the front and back elements of the list. All other elements we can, we'll have to use iterators to access. We want equality and inequality and the output operator to be overloaded for a list. We want it to be a proper type, so we want a default constructor, a destructor, a copy constructor, and an assignment operator. And we're going to have some terminology support, which is going to be establishing terminology that we're going to continue to use throughout all of our container classes. We're going to internally define T, which is the parameter, the template parameter, to mean value type. Those are just an aliasing. So inside of a list, value type means the same as the incoming template parameter. And inside of a list, the simple word iterator will be an alias for tlist iterator, type 2. And our complexity requirements are that all the ones, all the push front, push back, insert, pop front, pop back, remove, begin in, R begin, R in, front and back, all have constant runtime. No averaging necessary. And I didn't mention it, but empty also. And we're going to accept complexity. Linear complexity in the size of the list for the copy constructor, the assignment operator, the destructor, clear. And it's pretty straightforward why you need those, because remember, the copy constructor is going to have to make a copy of the whole list, so obviously if there are n elements in the list, there are going to be n things to do. Ditto for the assignment operator. The destructor, remember, has got to give back all the memory, but it's got to call the destructor for each element, and so that fact alone makes it have non-constant runtime. Clear is essentially like performing a destruction, but without making the list go out of scope. And finally, remove of T, if every element on the list had the same value and that was T, then remove of T would require N. Remove of T is supposed to remove every copy of T on the list and return the number of copies that got removed. And so, again, it's pretty clear that those all have enough work to do to make them O of N, where N is the number of items in the list. The one thing you might wonder about is size, and this is an example of where size might be a more costly operation than empty. So, and this is not atypical for containers. Sometimes size costs more than empty, and therefore if you can get by with empty, you're better off doing it, using empty in your algorithms. And for a list, we're going to insist that empty have constant runtime, but the size have runtime no worse than O of N, where N is the number of items in the list. The list iterator public interface is going to consist mostly of operators. It's going to have the equality operator, the inequality operator, so you can tell when two iterators are equal. And if you'll notice, the inequality, the not equality operator is essential to, for that loop I wrote on the board. You have to be able to say I not equal to N to get a loop termination. So you have to have a not equal to defined. The assignment operator is essential because that's how you initialize that loop. I equals L dot begin is an assignment. So that needs to be there. You got to be able to dereference. That's how you get to the list element. There's no point in doing an iteration if you can't find the element when you get there. You've got prefix, increment, and you've got postfix version of increment. Prefix is the one where the plus plus appears on the left of the symbol. Postfix is where the plus plus appears on the right of the symbol. Those are distinguished in C++ by the compiler by simply using the int parameter type for the postfix version. But the that int is never used. It's just a trick, and actually kind of a cheap trick. Not elegant at all, but it's the way the postfix version of this operator is distinguished from the prefix by the compiler. The same thing for decrement. We're going to have a prefix decrement operator and a postfix decrement operator. But we'll go ahead and have one named function here, which is useful, and that's the word, the function valid. And that's going to return a boolean, which will say whether or not this iterator is pointing to a legitimate list element. In most environments, in most circumstances, the valid function can be substituted for the I not equal to N function as a loop control mechanism. So in that loop on the board, I could replace I not equal to N by, as a continuation condition, by I dot valid as a continuation condition. And in most container classes, that'll be an equivalent. But not all, I hasten ahead. You will find in your project 2 on ring buffer that valid and I not equal to N are unfortunately going to have different meanings. So here's how you would use this list. You could declare a list by saying tlist bracket care and then L. What that does is declare a list, capital L, of that type. So that's going to be a list of characters. And when it comes to life, it has no characters in it. It's an empty list. You could push front A, push back B. These are things you could do. If you push front A on the list, then at that point, the list has the element A in it. If you push back B, then the list has A and then B. Push front C, that goes in front of all the other elements. And then you would have C followed by A followed by B. Push back D, you'd have C followed by A followed by B followed by D. And finally, push front E, push back F, puts B in the front and F in the back. Then finally, if I did this loop with a tlist, type care, double colon, iterator named I, you can go through the loop here, which is exactly the loop I wrote on the board, for I equals L dot begin, I not equal to L dot end, plus plus I, I'm going to see out star I. What that should do is output all the elements of the list, and this is a picture of what the screen would look like after running that little segment of code there. You'd see E, C, A, B, D, F, the contents of the list. I want to point out one subtle thing here. Notice that I could do tlist bracket char double colon iterator I. This is because of that alias that we made. We aliased iterator in the scope tlist to mean the same thing as a tlist iterator. And we will do this for all of our container classes. And when you have our container class, you can do double colon iterator, and that will give you the specific iterator type that has been defined for that container. All right, so the list implementation plan is similar to something we've talked about briefly in our previous course. We're going to use this notion of a link. Link is going to be a class that has two pointers and a value, a data value. It's got a pointer called prevlink that is designed to give you the address of the previous link. That's why it's called prevlink. And a link, a pointer to a link called nextlink, and that's supposed to be the address of the next link in the list. And the data item called value goes in the link as well. So the way it's going to work is we're going to string these together with pointers, and the values would be the values on the list. We also notice have a constructor of a type link. It takes a one parameter, and what it will do is set that parameter take that incoming parameter and set value equal to that parameter. It will also, in practice, set prevlink and nextlink equal to zero in that initialization list. So the idea is, how do you make a list? Well, the list itself is going to be have protected data. It's going to have one pointer to a first link and a pointer to a last link. And what I have here on the slide is a picture of how that would look. First link is a data item that the list owns. Last link is a data item that the list owns. And those are the addresses of two links that are out here in allocated memory space. To get from first to last, we'd go from first link, the pointer, out to the actual link. There you see that the data in that first link is A, so A is the first item on the list. Follow the next link pointer from that link to get to the next link, whose data item is X, so X is the next item on the list. Follow the next pointer, next link pointer to the next link, and access the data item D to get D as the third thing on the list. And similarly down to B, the last item, the last link on the list. You know it's the last link on the list because when you access the next link pointer for that link, you get null. You get zero, indicated by the arrow to ground, if you like. And notice also that last link is another data item in the list, which is pointing to this last item, the last link in the list. That's all. These are all private data items here from the list, protected items. So this is going to be an implementation plan, and there, all this stuff has to be managed as you're putting stuff in and taking stuff out of the list. So this, if you built a list, there's three. There's three views you can take of a list. there's the implementation view, which we were just talking about. Here's that view, repicture. Now, in the system view, notice that these links are represented by different memory blocks, of memory allocation, and they could be anywhere. You have no control over that. So, for example, the block A is way out here to the right, and its next link pointer takes us over here this way to block X, which is the next link. Block X's next link pointer takes us, that's its pred link pointer, its next link pointer takes us to D. B's next link pointer takes us to B. B's next link pointer is to null, so that tells us it's the last item on the list. A's prev link pointer takes us to null, tells us it's the first item on the list, and so forth. So that's kind of the system view. The client view is, of course, just exactly like a list ought to be. The client view is, here's L, and I've got A and followed by X, followed by D, followed by B, and that's my list. So now what about a list iterator? Well, a list iterator is going to be essentially a protected pointer to type link, and we'll call that data item curling. So a list iterator will have a protected pointer that designates the address of one of the links in a list. The operator plus plus for a list iterator will be, let's say curlink is currently pointing to the link that contains X. The way we get to the next link is we will follow the next link pointer of that link to the next link. Now, in practice, what that means is you reassign the value of curlink to be the next link field in the link whose address is curlink. Now, there's a cumbersome way to describe that, which is star curlink, which dereferences the curlink pointer and takes you to the actual link object. You've got to put parens around it because of precedence issues. And you do a dot to get to the next link field. And that's the field that we want to redefine curlink to be. That's an address. That accurately describes what we're doing. That process is cumbersome to write, and it's been there's an alternative operator called the arrow operator to find the pointers, which we can use instead, and that makes that assignment statement look like this: curlink equals curlink arrow next link. And once you get used to it, it's much more convenient notation to use. So here is the complete implementation of the operator plus plus for a list iterator. There's two lines. One is curlink equals curlink arrow next link. And then the second line is return star this, because something you may not have noticed before, and I didn't point it out, operator plus plus has a return value which is a reference to an iterator. And basically it returns a reference to itself. The reason it does that is so you can use it in expressions. Suppose you have x equals plus plus I. Plus plus I will result in that iterator moving to the next location. But what does X get to be? Well, X has to be a copy of the new I, right, that you got when you increment. So you return a self-reference to feed into that assignment so that X can get its value. To put it another way, suppose you got X equals plus plus I. Plus plus has a higher precedence than the assignment operator. Those are both operators. That's an expression. Plus plus happens first, and you have to have something to replace that value of that sub-expression plus plus I. has to be replaced with something before you can perform the assignment. The thing that's replaced with is a reference back to the incremented iterator. So we've kind of talked about how to use a list and how to use the list implementation once you've got the list built. We've talked about how to define an iterator for it and how to define the plus plus operator. So you almost have a feel now for how to iterate through a list. You're going to basically be following the links. Now notice though that all the link data has been made protected, so clients are never going to have access to this link data. Clients will not be allowed to know the addresses of the links. But the implementation will use them extensively. And there are pitfalls to this implementation. You've got to maintain all three of these data fields, first, last, and size. By the way, a footnote on the size parameter is that in the distributed version of TList, you will not find a size parameter. We'll talk about that later. These pitfalls are the special cases are tricky. Special cases are things like how do you push something into an empty list? Or what does it mean to push back into a list with only one element in it? Things like that. It's easy to make coding errors if you forget to define a pointer that's part of the structure of this list. You'll get bugs in programs that will be hard to find. If you think about that list, you go back a couple of slides here to the back to the three views, three perspectives on the list. Let's count the number of pointers we've got here. In the implementation view, we've got first link, which is a list member data item. That's a pointer, and it points over here to link containing A. You've got last link, which points over here to a link containing B. So that's two, plus each link has two pointers, which is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's 10 pointers involved in this list that has four elements in it. Any one of those pointers having the wrong definition will mess up, will cause bugs in the program. And these bugs show up as runtime errors, which means that the most informative message you will get will be core dump. These are not compile errors. So when you're programming these things, you have to be extremely careful. Think very carefully and long and hard about whether you've got the pointers correctly defined. Because when you do them incorrectly, finding that problem through testing is very difficult. One of the reasons classes like TList are used in C++ is because things like lists are very important, used all over the place in computing, and if in the C language, you have to create your own list every time you need one and use pointers. And it's so easy to make mistakes with that. It's just very error-prone kind of programming. So the idea is we're going to build this system, do all the hard, error-prone programming, get it all debugged, tested, bulletproof, and then give it to client programs through a public interface that is safe. So here is the class T list, but in its all of its glory here. First, the friendship. It's going to need to be a friend with T list iterator. And in fact, T list iterator is going to need to allow list to be a friend as well. So they're going to be tightly coupled classes here. T will be type def to alias to value type. T list iterator will be type def to iterator. With your terminology support, you'll have your copy constructor, let's say your default constructor, your destructor, copy constructor, assignment operator, push back, push front, insert, pop front, pop back, and remove. And we have both versions of remove, like we said in our wish list. One removes the item pointed to by an iterator, and the other one removes all copies of a value T and returns the number that got removed. Don't forget, we talked about the fine print on how these iterators are handled by the insert and remove functions. That has to be carefully done. Then we got the size, the empty, front, back, begin, rn. Those are all things we said we're going to have. We're going to have a generic display function method called display that we'll implement and use to. That'll be the thing that gets called by the output operator. Protected, we're going to have this class, T-Link, defined inside of the list class. So its scope, the scope of this definition is T-List, not global. The T-Link class is also going to need to allow both list and list iterator to be friends. But other than that, every element of this class is private. Notice that I didn't use the word private, but I also didn't use the word public. So it is a class. T-Link is a class. The default access permission is private. So everything in this class is private. So the only entities that could access anything in this, including the constructor, are its friends. Which means there's no hope of a client program ever doing anything with a link, right? Because the client program is not going to be listed in this friend list. It's got the data, value, predlink, and next link, just as we talked about, and it's got the one parameter constructor that we talked about. The structural data for the list itself is going to be for a pointer. Two pointers to type link, namely first link and last link, just like we talked about. And finally, something we hadn't talked about is we're going to make a clone function. It's going to make this list a clone of that list, the incoming parameter. That's going to be useful to isolate as a mechanism because it will be needed by both the copy constructor and the assignment. It's fairly complicated code, and so we want to do it once, get it right, and leave it in that function called clone. Note that that is private in list, so we're not making that available to clients. That's just a private method we're going to use to facilitate the implementation of public methods. Finally, we'll have equality, non-equality, and the output operator. T-list iterator, friend will be T-list. Terminology support, I need to go back and add, well, T is value type, but also T-list iterator is going to be named iterator inside of this class as well. Just say it's having to write long words all the time. Constructors, let's see, we've got the default constructor, but we also have a constructor for an iterator that takes a list as a parameter. And the intent there is that you can, if you initialize an iterator with a list, that means the iterator starts out pointing to the beginning of that list. That's what that means. And then, of course, we have the copy constructor. We're going to have another couple of methods that I didn't mention before called initialize and r-initialize. Initialize takes a list as a parameter, and that will mean, of course, setting the iterator to the beginning of that list. R-initialize will be setting it to the r-beginning of that list, the reverse, set it up for a reverse iteration. We'll also have a word retrieve that can be used in place of the dereference operator for those that prefer it. But it really does the same thing as a dereference operator. It returns a reference to the item in the list, the data item in the list that the iterator is pointing to. Valid, we already mentioned, is going to tell us whether or not the iterator is pointing to a valid element. And then we'll have the operators, equality, not equality, dereference, assignment, increment, prefix and postfix, and decrement, prefix and postfix. And finally, the private data item is nothing but a pointer to a link, and we're going to call it curly. So that pretty much summarizes what we said we were going to do. And we have a sort of implementation plan in mind. And let's talk about some of the ways, some of the things we do to implement that. The equality operator, for example, we can implement with a simple traversal. First thing you might do is check to see if they're the same size. And if they're not, you can return a zero. Two lists that aren't the same size are not going to be equal. But here's where you kind of have to use some judgment. What should equality of lists mean? This particular notion of equality uses what is believed to be the client notion of equality. A client program will think two lists are equal if they have the same elements in the same order. Otherwise, it will say they're not equal. And so that's what we need to check. And so here is an iteration that uses the while structure instead of the for structure, but it uses iterators. We're going to use two iterators, I1 and I2. They're both T-list iterators. I1 will be initialized to begin at the first list, L1. I2 will be initialized to begin at the second list, L2. And this will go while the two iterators are both valid. We're going to dereference I1 and compare that with the dereference of I2. That is to say, compare those two elements. And if those two elements are not equal, then we return a zero immediately. As soon as you find two elements not equal, but in the same list position, then the lists are not equal. But and we use postfix increment here so that the incrementation occurs after the dereference. So we're comparing every element of the list. You get all the way through this loop and you always found that the elements are equal. Then you've looked at every element of each list, found them equal pairwise as you march down the list. So we will assert that they are equal in return. Scroll down in this slide to some other things. Operator not equal, I have TVS written there, but I mean, how hard can it be? All we do not equal is just not, and then I call the operator equals, right? The output operator just makes a call to the display method. So here's the way you would define an output operator. here's the typical prototype for the output operator. It's got an O stream return, a reference to the O stream return, a reference to the O stream passed in as the first parameter, and then the second parameter is the thing you want to output. In this case, we want to output an entire list. So it's a list, and its name is L2. The parameter name is L2. So you pass in a list named L2, locally named L2, and you call the display function for that list. Display has a parameter that takes an O stream. So this is basically going to display the list out through that O stream. Then there's always return OS involved with the output operator because OS gets passed in as a parameter. It gets modified by that call to display. Stuff gets pushed into it. And then it gets returned in its modified state. The reason for that is so you can use several calls to the output operator together. Probably done this. You can also do the same with the input operator. You can do two or three, you can make one expression with two or three calls to the output operator in it. And this guarantees it does work as you would expect. Let me just illustrate that. Suppose you want to see out a double arrow B, double arrow C, what you expect to happen for this is A gets sent to output, then B gets sent to output, and then C gets sent to output. But this remember, this double arrow thing is an operator, so the first call of that operator is one that has C out on the left and A on the right. I'll put parens around that. What that will do is return, that'll send A to the stream and then return a reference to C out in a new state. So let me call that C out sub zero in state zero. This is now C out in state one that's had A shown. It gets returned, and so what you're left with is C out in state 1 followed by B followed by C. So the next call will be C out 1 to B parameter, and that will shove B through C out 1, making returning C out in another state called C out 2, right, which is sitting there waiting to be called again as a parameter. Used again as a parameter to the third call of this operator, which is going to have C out in state 2 and C, and that will shove C down the output stream and return it in the other another state, C out 3. So the point being that if you have C out, double arrow A, double arrow B, double arrow C, that's really an expression whose implied associativity is like that. Parens around the operator as it gets coupled. And that return of the reference of the O stream is what makes this possible. Here they are. They're in the narrative. Go to the narrative. I guess under the slide, implementing T-List, back to the last slide, you'll see some animations. There's a long discussion there on how this is actually done, how you put something into an empty list, how you put something into a list with one item in it. There's illustrated with them and animations. Here's one for push front character A. This is starting out with it. So here's that animation. You're starting out with an empty list. First thing you do is you call the operator new to create a new link with A in it. Next thing you do is you link first, make first link equal the address of A. And because it's a list with only one item, first link and last link are the same. So the next thing you do is make last link equal to the address of the link. Finally, you would increment the size plan. Now, the code for that is somewhat complicated. Here is an example of the code down here in the narrative. It's this pattern, insert T val at the front of the list. So case one is list is empty. That's that push front. The code for that is to let first link be new T link and you substitute T val in. That puts T val, that's the primer, the value you want to put in the link. And you let last link equals first link. Okay, now here's an illustration of, here's a list now with one item in it. Let's push B on the front of this list. First thing you do is create a new link. Link comes to life with B in it and its two pointers set to null. Then you set B, that new link's next pointer to A. Set A's prep pointer to the new link. Notice we still haven't, it's still not finished because first link is pointing to the wrong place. So we move first link to point to the newly created link. And finally, we'd increment the size. Now all these pointers have to be maintained correct at all times, including these null values at the two ends of the. Code for that define something called curlink, call it and remember the value at first link, then create the new first link at first link. This is a way to do this. First link equals new T link. So curlink is the old first link at this point, and first link is the new first link. Find first link arrow next link to be curlink, which is the old first link. Find curlink arrow prep link equal first link. So that's setting the old prep link, which used to be null, to the address of the new first link. Here's adding one more element to the front of the list to illustrate it. So here's the list with B and A in it now. B followed by A in the list. When I add C to that, create a new link with operator new. Comes to life with C in the link and its pointer's equal to null. Next step is you got to do all these one step at a time. Make C's next pointer point to the old front, the old first link. old first link's prep pointer part to the new first link, and then redefine first link to be the new first link. And you don't have to do everything in exactly that order, but you have to do it in an order that doesn't throw away a critical piece of information, which is very easy to do. So the code for that actually will, the code for that turns out can be exactly the same as the code we had for the case when there was only one item in the list. Now remove is going to be different. Remove is going to require three different cases. You have to be careful there. Remove is going to be what happens when the list is empty, what happens when the list has only one item in it, and what happens when the list has two or more items in it. Now, suppose you want to add something whose location is not at the front of the list. Then you've got to know where you want to add it. You've got a pointer, let's say, into, or you've got an iterator, first of all. That iterator will be, you get down to a pointer from that iterator. So, the picture is you've got a link. Let's say we want to add, we want to insert something at the place where I is pointing. And what you've got to do is create a new link. It starts out in limbo, something like this. Next thing you got to do is lace that new link in. Pointer of the link that preceded the place where I was pointing. To point to that new link. For the next pointer for the new link will point to the place where I was pointing. The place where I was pointing prep link will point back to the new link. And the new link's prep pointer will point back to the place where the old link used to point. That's the way you can kind of break into a link list and insert a new item. Now, the one thing we haven't done yet is when we insert an item in the middle of the list, we want to leave the iterator pointing to the new item. So we should have changed that iterator to now pointing to the item we just inserted. That was a total of changing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pointers to do an insert in the middle of the list. Implementing TList iterator. Show you two things. Operator plus plus and operator plus plus with an int parameter. I think those are both actually in the slide. Well, they're not in the slide, but they are in the narrative. So operator plus plus, the first thing you do is check to make sure curlink is not equal to 0. Remember, curlink is the data member of the iterator. You're now defining, you're implementing a member function of the iterator. the iterator has a one date item called curly. Check to see if curly is non-zero. That is how you, that's basically the check for validity. That pointer were zero, you can't dereference it. You'll get a runtime error if you try. Check to see if it's non-zero. And if it's non-zero, then you let curly be equal to curly arrow next link, just like we talked about before. And then you return a self-reference. What I really want to talk about, we've already done that one, really. Let's look at the postfix. This is following a pattern that can be repeated for every iterator type. You define the prefix, the postfix increment in terms of the prefix increment. So it always works like this. You take an iterator, call it whatever you like. I happen to call it clone here. Clone is equal to star this. So clone is an iterator that is a copy of myself. I am an iterator. Then I will call my operator plus plus, which is the prefix increment. So I will increment myself. Then I return the clone as a value. Notice that the value, the return value for the postfix increment is an iterator by value, whereas the return type for a prefix increment is an iterator by reference. With a prefix increment, returning star this, which is a self-reference, after performing the incrementation. In the postfix, you perform the incrementation, but you return a copy of yourself before you were incremented. That's the difference. And since that copy was locally made here, you couldn't return it by reference because it won't have a legal address for the function return. It's a local variable. So you have to return it by value. I'll just say, there's no way you should have understood this lecture. Not really. The point probably was to sort of trick you into thinking you understood it. Try to give you the general idea. But there's no way to completely appreciate the intricacy of this kind of application until you have some experience implementing one yourself. And the opportunity will appear in the form of the ring buffer project, which we'll discuss, as I said, next week. So you'll get a chance to do some of this stuff. And it's fun, but very difficult to get right. Concepts, I believe, you have gotten in this lecture. And if I've done a really good job, I've kind of convinced you today it's no big deal. But if you want, you probably already know that that would be a false notion. So where are we? It's time to take a break. And we will reconvene in a few minutes to do lab stuff.